Hello and welcome to episode 51 of Crying in the Book Club. It's Runname. It's Runname 2. We're back. Nobody thought we were going to make it to Runname 2. All the haters were out there posting Crying in the Book Club. They're doing Runname and then the show's going to end. And not only did the show not end, but it went on for another year and made it to the second installment of Runname. I'm your host, Jean-Luc. Oh, Runname, by the way, is when we talk. It's when it's May and we talk about the Runaways. If you weren't up on,
that's embarrassing. It's
boof. Yeah, Alex didn't get the pun. Despite, reading the comics. But anyway, I'm your host, Jean-Luc. Alex is here. Hello, Alex.
Hello. You know, it's fun because as soon as it's May, it's Runname. Thank you.
Yes, that's true. Mm-hmm. Emily is also here. Hello, Emily.
It's gonna be Runname.
Is that a song? I don't get the reference there.
Do you really not know that it's gonna be May? So there's a song by NSYNC. I'm fairly certain. I'm not going to Google it. And the end of the chorus is, it's going to be May. And so, people over the years have turned this into a meme about the month of May, in that it's going to be May. The lyric is, it's going to be me, but it's it's pronounced in a funny way for pop music. But it's gonna be May is a popular internet meme that I should have had loaded onto my soundboard for this, and I didn't. But it's gonna be Runname.
I don't think I know a single NSYNC song, so
we're gonna need to fix that. NSYNC was actually really good for the time. Occasional enjoyer of pop music. I feel like we could feasibly listen to the good NSYNC album. I'm not gonna say which one that is, listeners. You're just gonna figure that one out.
Is it one with It's Gonna Be Me on it?
I would have to look at the rest of the track list, honestly. The enduring problem with me and music is that a lot of times I will listen to an album and I'll listen to it in its entirety in a sitting for whatever reason. I'm doing chores or I'm driving or something, and I don't necessarily look at the track listing. So I mostly only know albums by vibes.
Sure.
And I can only assume that the NSYNC album that I'm thinking of is the one that I should make you listen to.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I do the same thing. It'll take a few listens to get to know the songs. Although NSYNC, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe they're more of a 90s band, but they are, era appropriate for the Runaways, right?
I guess, yeah, because it was the early 2000s. It was the 90s and then early 2000s.
And around that time, you couldn't have Kinder Surprises in the U.S., because of 9/11.
You actually still can't have Kinder Surprises.
Technically, you can't have Kinder Surprise in the US. They have a version of Kinder Surprise that you can have in the US, but it is not the same.
The one I'm currently eating is a mini one. So there's no toy in it. I think you can take out this in the US.
God, I used to love the Kinder eggs growing up because we could get them where I grew up, which was not in the United States. And they were delicious, and I had so many shitty little toys that, probably all of which got, tossed within 6 months of getting them, but it was always, it was exciting. And genuinely quite good chocolate by, when you're a kid, by, milk chocolate standards, it was up there for me, honestly.
I think it still does a good job, in terms of being hollow chocolate, that's still, just satisfying and nice. And then the biggest issue is it's not bigger, but then they made the little, they have the bars that you can break off.
Yes. Yeah.
Those are cool.
Yeah. When I was in college, my sister had gone on a study abroad trip to Europe and had brought back some Kinder eggs. And I was like, holy shit, like, this is great. And I looked it up and I could buy through a Canadian seller, like a case of Kinder Eggs. And I did, in fact, have a case of Kinder Eggs sent to the house that I was living in college. And over the course of like a year, just ate through the Kinder Eggs and would like give the little prizes and whatever to various friends.
How big of a box are we talking?
It's been
like 30 Kinder Eggs.
Well, I was just saying, like, it's been easily like,
yeah,
almost 10 years since this happened. So I couldn't tell you how many eggs there were, but it was like, it was far too many for a single person to eat. So I did like enlist the help of other people and give out Kinder Eggs and whatnot. But it was fun. It was a great time. I did enjoy it. But we're not here to talk about Kinder Eggs.
Yeah, unlike Kinder Eggs, Runaways is still legal in the United States. Somebody somehow should tell Marvel Editorial.
For now.
Yeah, for now. For now.
We'll see what happens come election time.
Oh, God. Grim. Don't make me think. I have to think about that, like, literally 9 hours a day. Don't. You can't be bringing that up on the podcast, Alex.
I'm sorry. But I do hope you win. You know, I mean, you're running hard.
And God, really... I hope we win, too. Well, I'm not running, to be clear. I would not be doing this podcast.
Well, yeah, but you're on a team.
But I am very clearly, decidedly on a team. That is true.
If there is a presidential candidate, and I learned that they have a podcast where they talk about comics and Kinder Eggs, it's a vote. Maybe even two. I don't know. I think that's enough.
Honestly, you've got your work cut out for you.
I'm sure if you go far enough down. Is it only two people on the ballot in the U.S. at the end of it all? Or is there like...
No, there depending on where you are, there are going to be up to 5 or 6 people on the ballot. There's going to be probably a minimum... Well, actually, it's going to be more. There's probably going to be a minimum of 4 people on everyone's presidential ballot.
Probably.
And then some states will have the PSL candidates. And some states will have Cornell West. Well, and some states will have RFK. I think RFK will end up getting ballot access in most states, but we'll
see. Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Were those the wrong letters? Anyway, Runame.
Those are the wrong letters.
Anyway, Runame.
Runame.
Got him enough for
so we are returning to the Brian K. Vaughan Runaways.
We sure fucking are, buds.
The last time we did a Runame month, we read the initial 18 issues of BKV's run, which was canceled due to poor sales, although he got to, you know, finish his story. And despite those poor sales, the book found new life in digest form, which you would not see today. Although, frankly, you should it would probably be a good idea for the big two to put their stuff out.
It would be a great idea. Like, they put out these volumes in manga size, or they put out these like these books in manga size volumes that were very accessible for kids in the early 2000s who were also getting into manga.
They tricked all the loser Toonami fans to go out and buy real comics.
You can just say me, but I didn't buy the comics. I just sat on the floor of my local Borders and read the comics until I was kicked out.
That's so based.
Wow. And now they're out of business.
And look at me now.
And that's why Borders no longer exists. It's all
Emily's. It was all me.
But yeah, so because the series kind of found new life in the digest form, sold really well in bookstores to some people who aren't ingrates and criminals like Emily, who actually, you know, pay money for things, BKV ended up repitching the series to Marvel, and they accepted the pitch. So it was relaunched in February 2005, not long after it was canceled. I think there was only about like a 6 to 8 month gap between issue 18 of the original run and issue 1 of this run. So in And well, and yeah, but it did run for a long time, actually. The series had a pretty big rebound in single issue sales. Like, mm-hmm. it was down in the sort of 12 to 18,000 range by the end of the original run. The first issue of the new of the relaunch sold over 30K, and then it sort of found a sweet spot around like the 25K mark. It sort of I looked at the sales data and it sort of oscillated between 24 and 26,000 per issue.
That makes sense to me.
For a long time. Like, obviously it fell off towards the end and the Whedon stuff falls off a little bit. But you know, it had its niche, and it was one of those books that, you know, the trade sales helped it, and I definitely, some of those people who read the digest came around to reading it monthly, so it kind of had like a good thing going. It ran for 30 issues, although 24 of those are BKV, and then 6 are, as we covered last year, Joss Whedon. So
yeah, we'll be catching up to that next episode.
Yes, yeah. So the original creative team returned. It's, you know, BKV writing it and Adrian Alfona on art. We read issues 1 to 12 for this episode. Issues 7 and 8 do feature a guest artist, Takeshi Miyazawa, who's a name I didn't recognize. So I hopefully not one of those Marvel white dudes using an Asian-sounding name. But I think in this case, it's Takeshi Miyazawa is an actual person and not an alias, so... But yeah, that's kind of the background on it, I guess. I assume people who are listening now have heard the previous episodes or, you know, read issues 1 to 18 of Runaways.
Yeah, but unfortunately, you're just going to have to be caught up to where we are on Runaways in order to enter this episode.
Well, I mean, just briefly, the high-level concept is that it's this group of teens. Their parents are evil. They killed their parents. One of them, Alex, who was one of the original teens, tried to betray the other teens. So they fucking killed him too. Mm-hmm. And then
no, okay. But to be fair, it's not like they were evil, and then like the kids just like in issue 2 killed them. There was like, you know, by the end was the
They killed them in issue. They were evil in issue 1, and then in issue 18 they killed them.
Yeah.
And then Captain America tried to put them in, you know, the social secure, the
the social services system.
Yeah,
the adoption system or whatever, and mm-hmm. since they all had superpowers, or some of them don't have superpowers, they just have cool giant velociraptors, so but they decided they weren't really going to do that, and so they end up striking out on their own. Nico, Chase, Gert, and Molly struck out on their own, living below the La Brea Tar Pits in an abandoned hostel. Well,
specifically, they're at they're underneath a museum for the La Brea Tar Pits.
Yep. But yeah, so this series picks up, just has a cold open. The group of bank robbers, runaways show up, beat the shit out of them. You know, usual superhero stuff. Mm-hmm. And they head back to their home, which is called the hostel. And a second time machine. Well, I'm not going to get into the whole. There's a time machine. Two of the
with Gertrude. It'll be relevant when it's relevant.
Well, it's relevant right now because a second time machine shows up with a future Gert inside of it from 20 years in the future, who warns the runaways about a supervillain called Victorious, who 20 years from now will kill all of the X-Men and the Avengers, and also presumably the rest of humanity. I don't think he's planning to stop with the superheroes. And
what is it, the Fantastic 12 or something?
The Fantastic 14, yes.
And Iron Woman? And there was mention
of an Iron Woman.
Well, and they reference What's-Her-Face from the X-Academy book, who would in the future become the leader of the X-Men. I can't remember what her name is off the top of my head. I'd have to look it up. But anyway, so, you know, and future Gert also tells them that Victorious is a kid named Victor Mancha, who is in Los Angeles right now, and they should go kill him too. Well, she doesn't tell them to kill him, but they're like, oh, maybe we should.
She kind of does.
Maybe we should kill this guy. She's like, you gotta do the thing to stop the horrible future. So, like, what other conclusion are they supposed to draw?
Yeah. Put him in jail? Yeah, I mean, like, no.
Yeah.
Move him to another country? No.
Yeah, no. Gotta off the brat. And future Gert dies in Chase's arms, which is a pretty fucked up thing to have happened, to have a 20-year-old older version of your girlfriend die. Yeah, that sucks.
A bit.
Kind of feel bad for him. I also feel bad for, like, current Gert, who sees herself die. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel bad for all of them, just, like, another layer of trauma on top of, oh, we killed our parents.
Yeah.
But, well,
Runaways really needed was more trauma.
Yeah. And while all this is happening, there's a therapy session going on. You'd think, hey, maybe the Runaways should go here to this support group for teenage superheroes, which is a team called Excelsior, which is Turbo, Darkhawk, Julie Power, Chambo, Ricochet, and Phil Urich, which all of these characters have some fun stuff where they pop up in future Runaways things, which is cool. But they have their first meeting as a support group for former teenage superheroes. And as the meeting ends, Turbo receives a phone call from the person who's bankrolling the whole thing, asking them to suit up and track down the Runaways to prevent, you know, more teens from becoming superheroes. Because if Marvel had too many teenage superheroes, they needed to cut down some.
Well, they didn't have enough books to put them all in, so the editor had to, you know, break the fourth wall a little.
Scott, it's a mess. It's like you've got Runaways, you've got Avengers Academy, you've got six different X-Men books where half the characters are
Teen Titans.
Well, wrong publisher, but yeah, same type. You know, same
too many young kids.
Yeah, too many young kids. So.
Yeah.
You got to go beat the shit out of them is the solution. And Excelsior and the Runaways do have their first meeting quite soon afterwards. The Runaways track down Victor to his high school, and his powers manifest as they try to
kidnap him. They sure do.
And he, you know, kind of rolls them at first, but then, you know, he gets put down pretty quickly. It is like a 4v4 or 5v1. But before they can escape, Excelsior shows up. They fight in the high school. They fight in the football field, and the Runaways are able to. The Runaways do end up escaping. They kind of get chased around LA for a little bit, and are eventually able to escape with Victor because Darkhawk kind of loses his shit, and the other members of Excelsior, you know, they don't want him to, like, actually fucking kill Nico, and so they make him stop. So they kind of end up fighting one another, as it typically goes with some of these superhero teams. And so the Runaways are able to escape, and they take Victor back to the hostel, where they sort of explain to him why they kidnapped him.
Mm-hmm.
And also that, you know, they know that his father is some evil supervillain, so they try to figure out who it is. But of course, before they can figure that out, he gets a call from none other than his father, Dr. Doom.
Oh no, he named him Victor. Victor. Oh shit.
Victor Jr. And so Dr. Doom tells Victor that he's holding his mother hostage. And so the Runaways strike out to this warehouse where Dr. Doom has come all the way from Latveria to hold Victor Mancha's mother hostage. They fight Dr. Doom, and the Runaways defeat Dr. Doom. And then have this great moment where, like, oh, fuck, it's a Doom bot. It's not actually Dr. Doom.
I gotta be honest. Like, I had kind of forgotten that, like, for a second, I was like, wait, he's a robot. Isn't he Ultron's kid? And then they were like, it's Dr. Doom. And I was like, oh, shit, I guess I misremembered. So I did, like, get got by the twist again, which is in hindsight very funny, because
that is
very obvious.
That's pretty good.
I was just like, I was just excited to be reading Runaways again, to be honest. I was just on for the ride.
Yeah. So as Emily has alluded to, after they defeat Dr. Doom, the truth is revealed that Victor's father is Ultron, who created Victor to be his successor, to be his ultimate revenge against the Avengers. I believe that this happens like right after Disassembled is the big Ultron event that had happened before this. Mm. But that makes sense. You know, so the Runaways start fighting Ultron, which doesn't go well for them. And they sort of get bailed out because Excelsior shows up and Darkhawk just goes absolutely sicko mode and kills Ultron. And, you know, before the Runaways are able to escape, Chamber, kind of, who is a mutant who can breathe fire, kind of facilitates their escape. And then the arc ends with a reveal that Chamber was not actually Chamber, but a mysterious other person disguised as Chamber who goes to an MMORPG session afterwards and vows revenge on the Runaways.
It's Alex.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. It's Alex. We'll find out. We'll find out.
Okay.
We'll find out.
It's Alex. Everybody knows it's Alex. We don't have to. We've literally read the comics that come after this. We don't have to pretend. Uh-huh. We know that it's Alex.
Yeah.
I disagree. You know.
Everyone on the Runaways, what is this called? The comicboard.com forums was convinced it was Alex.
No, I actually, I heard you went on a deep dive and I'm very curious about
it. Well, we could talk about that.
Yeah.
But we got.
It's very much like, yes, there's a shadowy person and they're talking and they're black and like, ooh, well, yeah, who else was a kid in black in this series?
Yeah,
oh,
no, like, sorry. I was being silly. I don't think they can.
I thought so, but then you committed to it, and I was like, does Emily remember this? And you just said you didn't remember the Ultron. You got baited by the...
No, I did. Doctor I Doom did thing, get baited but. By the Ultron, but mostly just because, like, for a second... Okay, so the problem was like, going into this, I did remember that I was like, he's Ultron's kid. But then, like, I convinced myself for a second that I had misremembered based on the way the comic was setting things up. I was like, oh, I must have just like misremembered and it was like a Doombot thing and not Ultron. But that was a
writer, Brian K. Vaughan is.
Yeah, great writer, Brian K. Vaughan.
Anyway, I'll kind of shotgun. The next two arcs are shorter, have less going on. The next one is it just a two-parter? The Runaways encounter Swarm, who's this super old villain who's just made of bees. And
very fun.
Victor kicks his ass. And the team, you know, afterwards, they go shopping. This is the sort of infamous Carolina making her move on Nico, which, you know, does not go well. And then immediately
we covered or we talked about this like kind of in one of the previous episodes because I had a whole thing about it because this was like the like as far as reading this era of Runaways goes, we just like specifically skipped over this arc.
Yeah. And as it's happening, a Skrull ship lands and who is it? It's our boy Zavin. We love Zavin. At this point,
our girl
nobody
Zavin.
Loves him. Well, at first our boy Zavin, then our girl Zavin, then, you know, just some guy Zavin. Zavin explains who they are, that they are, you know, Carolina's betrothed fiance. And, you know, the Runaways don't like that, so they fight for a little while. But then Carolina decides to hear Zavin out and, you know, is convinced by the argument that, hey, if you come marry me, we can stop this interplanetary war. And also, I can also be a girl if you want.
Also, Carolina's kind of wanted to get off the planet for a while now. Not even like Nico rejection withstanding. Like, Carolina has wanted to get the fuck out of here. And this is like a one-way ticket out.
It's a subplot in X-Men 97 somewhat. This marriage for stopping intergalactic war. Well,
Well, is it a Shi'ar thing?
Yeah,
I assume in X-Men.
Yeah, it's a Shi'ar thing.
But who's the mystery person? Anyway, go watch the show.
We'll see more of Carolina and Zavin in the next episode. They'll be back.
Hmm.
And in the final arc that we read, we see Cloak of Cloak and Dagger fame, show up at the hostel and bring the runaways to New York so they can help him clear his name, because an impersonator posing as Cloak just beat the shit out of Dagger. And there's like a, it got caught on video. And so all the Avengers are like, yep, it's Cloak's fault. Cloak did it. None of them stop to consider for a moment that there's like 50 bajillion different shapeshifters.
Right.
In the Marvel universe. They're just like, yeah, he did it. And they're all like, all of them are, you know, it's like everyone, Captain America, Iron Man, Luke Cage, mm-hmm. Wolverine. They're all
except
like,
Spider-Man.
Yeah. Except Spider-Man, yeah. Spider-Man is the one exception. Gert and Victor sort of have this bit where they become friends with Spider-Man. And, you know, while they're getting sushi with Spider-Man, Nico and Chase are off actually solving the mystery. They find out that they sort of trace the attack to a drug dealer who's peddling mutant growth hormone. Turns out that they're able to find out because of an incredible scene where Chase bluffs that the Pride faked their deaths and now their kids are representing the Pride out in the world. They find out that the nurse who was caring for Dagger was also the one responsible for the attack, mm-hmm. and had used the MGH to gain, you know, powers in the way that's just how that drug works. So they, you know, go back to the hospital, beat the shit out of that guy, clear Cloak's name. While that's happening, Molly beats the shit out of Wolverine and Captain America, which fucking rocks.
Oh yeah.
I love the bit where she like just punches Wolverine out of the church door. It's so sick.
So good.
Molly is just the fucking goat.
Mm-hmm. Molly versus Wolverine never fails is really the thing.
I do really love that it's sick that like Molly in universe is a mutant. She never hangs out with the X-Men, mm-hmm. but she is, you know, secretly just like one of the strongest mutants, but she's never in like the X-books. She's mm-hmm. always like off doing her own thing. There were people on the forums who were really worried that because while this is happening, House of M is also happening, which is where the normal No More Mutants thing comes from. Uh-huh. And so there's Wolverine references it that there's only like 182 mutants. Everyone on the forums was like, oh my God, I hope Molly's one of the mutants. Or I hope somebody had a funny comment that was like, I'm glad Brian K. Vaughan seems to be ignoring the events because Brian Michael Bendis is a hack. I was like, God, they were cooking back then.
That's so funny.
But yeah, that's issues 1-12 of, you know, this run of Runaways. I feel like, you know, we've covered our history with the characters. We don't really need to go down that route. But what did you guys think of this? You know, just broad thoughts. Did you like it? How does it compare to the other Runaways stuff that we've read? I know Emily seemed a little down on it.
I was a little down on it in our group chat, which, you know, is true. I will say that I feel like even though I had some issues with like individual like scenes and jokes in this run, ultimately, like, there were things that I enjoyed about it, like plot wise that made it easier for me to get through on like a plot level versus like individual lines of dialogue, which there were several that annoyed me, beginning with the implication that, as I'm sure you're both aware, because I did complain about this in the group chat, the implication that Nico can summon the Staff of One at any point during her menstrual cycle. Or not during the menstrual cycle, but specifically during the like period, like menses section of the menstrual cycle.
as we talked about, is just not to be like a not to be like a Cinema Sins actually type guy, but that's
not how it works.
That's actually one of like two or three times in these 12 issues where BKV just ignores how the Staff of One works.
Specifically for a joke.
Which is,
I feel like the second time is also like,
the second time is when Chase uses it. To escape from the drug dealers, which also is not how it works, because he is not the one who summoned it. But yeah, no, the period thing is not just inconsistent. It's a kind of a bad joke.
But. Which, I mean, like, the Chase one was done for a plot reason. This was exactly done for a bad joke. And it's like, oh, I'll take the Chase one any day.
Well, the Chase one you can excuse because you're trying to make a plot point happen. Like, with Nico in this scene, like, you could have done anything to make that happen. You didn't have to make it a period joke, and you did. And it irritated me. And I thought it was stupid. It was so stupid that, like, when I started to complain to Gwen about this joke, I didn't even have to, like, when I said, like, Nico was able to summon the staff without doing like a sacrificial bleeding, Gwen immediately knew where this horrible joke was going. That's how bad it was.
Yeah. I feel like this feels more anachronistic than the previous 18 issues.
That's why I was like, did BKV become a worse writer? I don't know that it became a worse writer. I just think that there are more jokes that aged poorly than like the initial run, which I remember being, you know, despite any use of the R slur that I didn't love, like
did use it once in this run, I think, but
just like the first run of Runaways, like, I remember being very charmed by, and this didn't have as much of that same charm in some ways.
Yeah. It's like just not, I mean, the first 18 issues of Runaways, I think, are so, like, it's clear that Brian K. Vaughan had a from start to finish story idea full of really cool cliffhangers and, reveals as you go on, and it's these, you know, they're always on the run. There's this momentum to every issue of that series, and this one I feel like it's like a lot of, like, they're not really always on the run, there's not really always movement, but they're like trying to figure out new ways to do it, and it's like, ooh, how do we up the ante, but it almost doesn't feel quite as natural. I do think it does get better as it goes on, and once we actually get Victor established, then kind of after the Ultron stuff where you're like, oh wow, Ultron.
Yeah, definitely, like, at least like once I hit like a third of the way to half of the way through, I was like, oh, actually, this is like, I am actually having fun. I'm sorry, BKV, that I was so mean earlier, but maybe make better jokes.
Yeah. And then there's also like the whole like, oh, you BKV, you sure love to like have violence happen to women randomly to like move your plot forward. Like, it's Victor's mom just gets like kidnapped and then like murdered straight up. Yeah. And then, you know, Dagger getting like beat up by this guy, and it's like, it's the only way you know how to, like, and I know he has other ways of creating tension in stories and stuff,
but also
but I think the strongest part, sorry, the last thing, is that the interactions between the characters I think are pretty strong. Some of the relationship stuff is a little bit weird, and especially with like Carolina leaving and that thing, I'm not the biggest fan of, but I think like in general when they're talking to each other,
the scene good. Of like Nico coming on to Chase, that I like, like when I read this the very first time as a kid came out of nowhere, but like reading it now, like they were definitely setting up, but still like in a way that made me dread it. Like, because I mean, you're not supposed to like it, but also just, I don't know. It's like, why do we even have to do this to Nico? Like, why do we have to continue to make her the character that wants to kiss other people's boyfriends when like there could be plenty of other ways that she is dealing with the stress of the situation?
This could be me like backfilling because now the Nico Carolina thing is obviously canon. But my read on that, the recent times I've reread this, because this is I reread it a couple years ago also, mm-hmm. is that this whole like that whole arc post Carolina leaving, it feels to me like it was going to like BKV had like somewhere in the back of his mind the idea that it was going to culminate in Nico and Carolina being together, because it kind of feels like Nico being like distraught about Carolina being gone and not really fully understanding why.
And she even in like the text of what we read, like there is a scene where she talks about how like no one else leaving hurt this much. So like clearly like there's being the like the groundwork laid. I feel like it like the fact that it didn't culminate in the two of them actually having something later like makes this weaker by like as a result. Like if they had actually gotten together, if this had like led to that specifically, like I would probably feel differently about the way it plays out. But like just as it stands, I can definitely see where you're coming from, and I think that that's what was intended based on what's written. But just given the way that things play out and them not actually getting together until like the Rainbow Rowell run, like
well, which, I mean, and it's also nice. Oh, go ahead, Alex.
No, it's nice that it pays off. It's just like these 12 issues are not great for Nico, and I think
it's nice some that of the it writing for her off, but if I didn't know that it paid off, I would be I would be pretty pissed about the way that Nico is characterized in this about that, and I was at the time. So
well, I mean, that's these issues obviously read much differently with the Rowell run.
Yes, 110%.
I think we talked about this, but the Rowell run really does pay off a lot from the BKV run that feels like no one else who ever wrote these characters picked up on. Like, literally, there's just that Julie Power Carolina scene, and Julie Power and Carolina are dating at the start of the Rowell. Well, technically, it's not Rowell who puts them together. Like, they're together in Avengers Academy. But, like, the fact that, like, that does get picked up on later is great. Like, there's so much stuff like
I did enjoy, like, the little, because I had seen the, and I'd read this a long time ago, but even, like, past that, I had seen, like, the Carolina and Julie Power panels out of context on Tumblr and was excited to see them again.
Yeah, it's cool to see those characters. And like Darkhawk is cool because Chase becomes Darkhawk later on. So there's a lot of cool stuff like that.
Yeah. And Darkhawk is just super cool with like he's just like a 90s. He's just like a 90s like anti-hero with that suit on. Just like he's here to save the day, but doesn't care if the bad guy dies. And if you get in his way, you know, watch out. Which is good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did you guys think of the Excelsior characters? I mean, I know they don't really show up after the first arc, but they're kind of an interesting foil to the Runaways.
I do think that they're a really interesting foil to the Runaways. And in that way, I kind of wish that we had gotten to see a little more of them. But also, like, I don't know, like, a lot of the stuff that they had to do with their mysterious benefactor who was like paying them to go after the Runaways. And it's like, I would have liked to see maybe like some of what they are doing outside. You know, I know it's the book, The Runaways, but like, I don't know, like I would have maybe liked to see a little glimpse into what they're doing outside of pursuing the Runaways.
Well, we can always read The Losers, which is the book about them.
Yeah.
I think it's just funny that the people working at this like superhero support group, they're like, as soon as there's any like the whole thing is these people like have trauma for being superheroes or being or supervillains mm-hmm. or being put in those situations, and like money gets thrown around and these people are like, you guys should get dressed and do one final mission. I think you should. I'm like, what the, get the police involved. Like,
the like one last ride situation that they were kind of finding themselves in, even though like I know that that's bad for them. Like, that's just
they're
like
kids.
They're
kids.
I just really in anything enjoy the trope of like everybody, like the gangs getting together for like one last heist, like one last job, like, and that's technically what they're being sold here is like, if they just do this one last job, they'll be able to save so many kids. And
so many. And they think that $1 million is going to let them reach every person with powers.
It's $1,002,005. That it was worth.
Okay. You know what? That's enough for that last billboard to be like,
still. Yeah.
A lot of text.
I really enjoy the Rick Jones twist too, or reveal twist, whatever you want to call it. Because
that also I had forgotten about, so I was very delighted when I turned the page and that had been like set up and paid off.
It's also cool because BKV definitely sets that up as like, oh, we have this mysterious benefactor and nobody really knows who it is. And the characters are like Phil Urich and Turbo specifically are so confident that mm-hmm. he's a good guy that, you know, you just have that sinking feeling in your gut the whole time, like, oh, they're being played by somebody who's fucking with the runaways. Mm-hmm. And then it you know, kind of inverts that twist, which I think is pretty fun, especially because, I mean, we talk about this with BKV, like he's one of like the absolute goats of like comic book cliffhangers and like
he really
the setups
is.
And reveals, like the sort of tease of Victor's father, where you see the back of the chair at the desk and there's the clock on the table. You have no idea how much the people on the forums were like trying to figure out the items on the table. And they were like, oh, there's a clock. Maybe it's Kang, 'cause he's a time traveler.
I want to hear all about your journey into the forums. I really do, because you talked about this earlier and I'm fascinated by the concept. I'm delighted. I need to know.
It really seems like one of those things that, like, it should just be a dead link. Mm-hmm. But I found it for a dead link, actually, because I was looking for BKV interviews from the time when this came out.
I was wondering how you ended up here.
And the forum had a link to one, and so I opened the forum, and then the link was dead, so I couldn't actually get to the interview. But then I was like, wait, this is a forum where basically from the time where they put the preview up, mm-hmm. there's like this group of people going back and forth. There's just a thread that's all for this Runaways run. And yeah, they're all talking. It's just like exactly what you would expect. Like, it's comic book fans every month, you know, the same group of like four or five users come back and talk about Runaways. There's a lot of speculation about Victor's dad, which is fun. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of people talking about how epic and, you know, epic Bacon Molly is. Like, they all talk in that same, it's so 2005. Also, it's crazy because somebody literally after the first issue comes out, one of the guys on there is like, I'm pretty sure Carolina's a lesbian. And
base king
Gator, wow,
base king.
Here, I found the comment from February 25th, 2005, which I think is the day the first issue comes out. Carolina's a lesbian, right? She said she's in love with somebody and she's having the same I'm a loner attitude that Colossus was having. The parallels are uncanny. And she says, and she blushes, and at the end of The Good Die Young, which is the previous trade, mm-hmm. she blushes when Nico says she's done with boys. Mm-hmm. Was she outed in another book I don't know about? And like, no, this guy was like
Base King.
Dr. Strange,
Galaxy
in the beam,
Brain
like,
King.
Levitating.
At the totally I... 110% picking up on all of the lesbian brainwaves that BKB was sending out about Carolina up until this point. Because, like, if you go back and look, like the seeds of everything is there. You just, yeah, like, have to know that it's there. But this guy did not. He, like... Well,
and there's something so wholesome about, like, wait, this happened before the Colossus. I recognize this pattern.
Like, I do love it, it's, that also. It's like
this happened to my, or like my good friend Colossus went through this too. Like, oh, I can so see this. Cute. Oh, good for them. And it's like, oh, comics. Yay.
Jean-Luc, this is really just the existence of this, like, lesbian Carolina truther has really, like, just made my night. Like, I'm so delighted to know this.
I'm glad. There's also, like, these guys love speculating.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a scene in, and this is actually something that I didn't pick up on. I'll get to what I didn't pick up on in a second. But there's a moment in the last arc that we read where Wolverine and Iron Man are talking about the kid, as in, like, somebody who's going to help them find the runaways. And they're all speculating about who it is. They're like, Franklin Richards, the Reed and Sue Storm's son? Like, it's all these different characters who it could be. And then they get to the next issue and everyone's like, wait, there was no payoff for that? They didn't actually, like, reveal who the kid was? And then somebody points out, and I'm looking for the exact comment, but somebody points out that when Spider-Man shows up to talk to Gert and to talk to Gert and Victor, they say something along the lines of, like, well, don't talk to us like we're kids. And Spider-Man says, I just told a smelly Canadian man that 5 minutes ago, referencing Wolverine, which I didn't pick up on. And I was like, and somebody pointed that out. And everyone in the comments, everyone in the replies was like, whoa, that's such a cool note. You know,
Spider-Man's the kid.
It's cute to read to. I mean, it's a lot of people talking about how, like, it's a lot of people talking about, like, oh my god, I love that, like, when Julie Power and Ricochet are talking, they're like, you know, oh, we both love Lord of the Rings. It's like, you know, the sort of, like, extremely kind of epic referential dialogue.
So silly.
From that,
it's like
time.
One panel too.
So
it's like,
silly. The corniest dropping of those references from a 2024 perspective.
Yeah.
I know that must have killed in 2005.
And it's talking about, like, Peter Jackson, but, like, on a first name basis. Like, oh, watching in Peter's film, it's not quite
the way that Julie Power refers to Peter Jackson as just Peter, like, in a way that didn't necessarily feel contemporary to me, but maybe, like, I just also wouldn't have been in, like, film circles at that time. But, like, the way that she says Peter reads, like, and I know that this came out forever ago, but it reads very, like, people on Twitter to me, like, referring to a director by their first name like that. But
yeah, I agree.
Mr. Jackson to you. Come on.
Yeah, the way that it came across is, I was like, that doesn't sound natural to me, like the way that, like, a teenage girl would talk. But
yeah, it's some of that referential dialogue feels very ham-fisted.
Yeah. And that's part of why that was part of why I asked if you guys thought that BKB got worse writing this book between the beginning and now, is because there was a lot of, like, referential humor that I didn't think landed as well.
There kind of is in the initial run as well.
But it didn't land the way
sure.
in the
yeah,
beginning.
Yeah, that's fair.
Is what I mean.
I do think that this is kind of like, and this is like,
trying to recapture the magic.
Well, yeah, but my point is that this is kind of the contemporary writing style, right? Like, this is like, popular way of, like, writing TV shows at the time, and it's bad. No. But at the time, like, people went crazy for this stuff.
Yeah, we talked about, like, BKB being, like, a Buffy fan, and, like, you know, Joss Whedon being a Runaways fan. So, like,
you know, even then, BKV's clearly operating at a higher level.
Well, I mean, like, I feel like that goes unsaid, but also.
Yeah. He's Whedon pilled, but he's not Whedon at this point.
Exactly.
So. That's a really good way of putting it, Alex.
And you know what? He gets rid of it in the future, so it's good.
So, Emily, here's something that will... This is a comment from the same guy who correctly identified Carolina was a lesbian.
Oh, God.
This is for issue 11, which is the penultimate issue of what we read. He says, Chase is the coolest runaway ever, and damn, I'm pissed he didn't get with Nico. So...
Well, look,
this guy's a land of contrasts.
Broken clocks right twice a day, et cetera, et cetera. You know, he may have been based, but look, I'm sorry. Like, Nico Chase is never a pairing that I can ever get behind because it's just so silly. So, like,
it works for neither of them.
It works for neither of them.
And that's why it's perfect. Opposites attract.
No, that's not it either.
Every relationship should be based on having a little bit of hatred for one another.
Well, how else are you gonna make?
Well, see, now you've got me on board again.
I hate my wife, or like, you know, that's the only joke I know. But it's a
what was the joke?
I hate my wife.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I just like there's nothing that can get me behind Nico and Chase as like a pairing in any way. Like, it's not even heterophobia at this point. Like, it's just like
no, it's a bad pairing.
It's just bad writing.
It just doesn't work.
If it would happen,
it's not great.
And I mean, like, written into the story is like the idea that Nico trying to kiss Chase is a bad idea. Like, there's no equivocation on that, I don't think.
But people liked it because it's like, oh my god, it's like the cool goth chick and the
jock
like,
got with the cool goth girl. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. So
maybe I could get with my cool local goth girl. Maybe you need to talk to her.
Talk to your local goth girl today. Call.
Talk to your local goth girl today.
Tell her no on Bill 884. What do you Americans do? You guys like text or something? Call your representative?
Yeah, you can call your representative.
Call your representative about and just, like, the goth just, like, girl that chill? Curved you today.
Okay. Waste what if they're time. The goth girl that curved me today?
Waste their time.
Okay.
Jeez, anyway, my train of thought is fucking ruined by that.
The art in this book. I mean, Adrian Alfano does it. We've talked about him before. You know, Jean-Luc's a hater with the art, and I understand why. I like it.
I'm kind of like, it's one of those things where I just get used to it and accept it. Like, yeah, like it. This is what these issues look like. I wish they didn't, but it is what it is.
I'm just fond of his style.
That's good. That's good. He signed my book and he didn't yell at me. He was nice, so he's okay.
Oh, hell
in my
book.
Yeah, years ago. But there's one issue that has it's the one you mentioned, Jean-Luc, or maybe it's two.
It's two. It's 7 and 8.
7 and 8 that has a guest artist in, and it kind of has like a manga style to it. And
it's way worse.
Mm-hmm.
Way worse than manga style.
No. It's way worse than Adrian Alfano.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well. I mean, I have to look at it again, but it did feel like they were sort of like, because this comes after the whole Digest thing where they were trying to like court a manga crowd and stuff. And it sort of felt a little bit like maybe a little like fan servicey. I mean, not in the way that
kind of trying to recapture the magic
or just like a nod of like, yeah, like, hey, look at that. We did a couple issues with that.
Yeah.
CB Cebulski is white, but we actually hired someone who's maybe Japanese. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I get what they why you would go for this style for a fill-in artist, because at the end of the day, like, it is still somewhat consistent with Adrian Alfano. Obviously, it looks different, but the characters are too chibi-ified for me. Their eyes are too big. Carolina looks like she's, like, 27. Like, it's really weird. Like, No. You know who Carolina looks like, Emily?
Who does she look like?
She looks like fucking Ambolina.
Yeah.
from the Amory Wars, the Coheed and Cambria comics.
Which, by the way, recently that came up in conversation in a group chat that I'm with Chad that does not involve the two of you. And Chad did say that he was never going to forgive you for making him read the Amory Wars. And I said, well, that was a combined.
Well, but I didn't make him read the good parts of the Amory Wars.
We did read the very bad parts.
I don't believe you that there are good parts.
But In Keeping Secrets and Good Apollo and Burning Star 4 are both way better than Second Stage Turbine Blade. Yeah. And, you know, starting next month, you're going to have to start hearing from me updates about No World for Tomorrow.
John, we can definitely do our own like mini show about No World for Tomorrow.
It's on my pull list. It's going to be getting it.
I'll hop in. But then I'll do a solo show about the Doomsday Clock where I just talk to myself.
That would be really funny.
I would much rather read the Amory Wars than the Doomsday Clock.
Ease any day of the week. I would read any part of Amory Wars. I would read the novel before I would read I would consider reading Year of the Black. No, that's not true, because unfortunately reading if they've made an audiobook of Year of the Black Rainbow, I would read Year of the Black Rainbow.
It's the album Year of the Black Rainbow.
That's not it, Jean-Luc Botville, and you know it.
But Doomsday Clock December has a nice ring to it. Doomsday Clock December. Think about it. Don't think about it too hard. Now stop thinking about it.
December Clock.
Alex, you were talking about the art, if you want to.
Yes, I thought that.
Come back from our tangent.
I like Adrian Alfano's art. I think it's I think it's very it's very watchable with your eyes, very very readable.
You can look at it.
Yeah, you can look at it. Not for too long, but you can look at it. I just thought it was kind of neat that they had those two issues with the fill-in art. But I too agree, I didn't actually enjoy it all that much. It was also, it was weird because if I remember correctly, it wasn't like it was a new arc. It was a new arc, but it was like in the middle of like intense stuff happening in the story.
It was like right at the end of an arc, and it's like, okay.
I was just gonna say, like, it's strange that like those big moments where like Carolina leaves and, you know, Zavin shows up are drawn by a fill-in artist and not Adrian Alfona. But I understand, like, I'm sure he just needed like more time to work on the upcoming issue, so it was probably just a scheduling thing.
Very weird.
It killed the moment a little bit too. Like it did make it feel, when I was reading it, that it was just like, oh, this is almost out of nowhere. Which it's not out of nowhere, because, you know, she obviously doesn't feel like her leaving wouldn't be surprising. It's just the way that it was sort of handled.
And they also
and presented.
Like, there's like a scene like right before everything gets set up where I think it's like either Nico or Molly is like, wow, Carolina, I don't know what we'd do without you. And it's like,
bye.
Well, you're about to find out.
But
yeah, I'm pretty sure, I think it is Nico.
It's probably Nico.
Nico really is just lost without her. It's
yeah. Well, and it's wild that it took so many years for them to become what do you call it?
Yeah, like reading this in hindsight feels so strange that like it took so long for them to actually get together based on like just like the everything
I hope there's no shippers on this forum you're looking at, because that's like 20 years they had to wait.
Well, there's only I assume only like straight men on these forums, so
there's actually not like everyone is like pretty cool about the Carolina thing, but like everyone's like it's also very 2005 because they're like, wow. But it's like Nico can't be gay because like she was with Alex, like she's clearly in the guys, like she can't.
Bisexuals, you know, don't exist.
Colossus was only into guys. He was not into women. So
that is very much the energy that they're talking. Because and they're talking about it like, oh, there's going to be some reveal like later that like, you know, Carolina's going to end up back with the Runaways, which, you know, they were right about that. But they're like,
sure,
she's going to end up with somebody, but it can't, like, Nico's the only one that makes sense, but it can't be Nico. It's Yeah. There's a certain charm to it if it wasn't like kind of shitty.
Yeah. I definitely get that.
There's like a little bit of earnestness, it sounds like, where they're like, oh man, I wish Brian Kavon didn't write himself into this corner because they would have been so good together, but they're already,
There is one poster who is like it, who says like it would be a good thing. This is also the poster who said that Gertrude is the most attractive characters in all of comics.
Based.
Yeah.
Based.
It's great because they say it in response to somebody else being like, I hate how inconsistent Gert is drawn. Sometimes she's fat and sometimes she's hot. And then this other comment responds. No, I'm serious. That's actually...
I do have a bone to pick with the...
Oh, yeah.
...of the way Gertrude is drawn because, like, she is very clearly, like, based on interiors art, supposed to be, like, a, like, plus-size character. And... that is not the way that she is portrayed in a lot of covers or a lot of like,
or in the future where like they come back
or like when, when future Gertrude comes back, like she's like a skinny baddie. Like,
and it's like, it's a weird, because on one hand they're like, it can't be Gert. It doesn't look anything like Gert. And it's like,
but
the last for like three pages, like, I don't know why they had to do that thing, but
So I found the comments. It says, I'd take her referring to Nico over Gert, who's never consistently drawn. She's either really pudgy or somewhat good looking, which is true. I agree with Emily that like, they can't quite nail down how to draw Gert consistently. Uh-huh. This guy responds, big what the fuck to that. Gert is easily the most attractive character in any mainstream comic I've read. I could easily write a long-ass post justifying this. Question is, would anybody care? Commenter responded, this I would love to hear. The Gert lover responds, my brain is a little zonked right now, so I'll just use the laundry list approach for now. Her keen, understated fashion sense. Sure, Nico gets points for making her own clothes DIY style, but if they end up looking like Hot Topic discount bin castoffs anyway, what's the fucking point? Her realistic body image probably resembles the average female Runaways reader more than any other character on the team. A little pudgy, but so what? More to love. Her sarcastic wit and casual eye-rolling disaffectedness. Her way of being assertive without being overbearing. And this, by the way, a reference to something that Brian K. Vaughan did write, which is a horrible line. Her apparent bedroom talent, two words, power vacuum, which is something that Chase says about Gert earlier in the comic.
I was confused with that one because like, I was like, is that a sexual innuendo? Or like,
yes, she's really good at sucking dick.
Like, but it's just like, you wouldn't want a power vacuum. You would die. Like, I don't know.
Alex, have you never stuck your dick in a power vacuum?
No. My shame?
Look, conversely, Alex and I, as a person who has sucked a dick, and I presume Alex is a person with a dick who has been sucked, power vacuum is not what you want.
It's scary. This is like...
No, it's awesome.
Like, if you just said a vacuum...
Okay, virgin. Like...
All right, I'm not a virgin when it comes to fucking power vacuums. Like...
You know what? Respect.
Okay, you got me there.
Respect. You know what? You get the next. You get the final question, Jean-Luc. You get to end off the show.
On that note, do you guys hear that sound? It's not a power vacuum.
It's a power vacuum. What is that?
It's the doomsday power vacuum.
It's the doomsday power vacuum. That's why I'm a virgin. You know, it was great, but, you know, I'm a eunuch now.
I'm a eunuch now.
Anyway.
Wow.
The sound of the sound of the power doomsday clock... He's telling us that it's time. Go ahead, Alex.
Huh? I was just going to say that Doomsday Clock.
More like Doomsday Cock.
It rhymes.
Nice.
Back to you, Jean-Luc, in the studio.
Yeah. It's time for our cry space.
What's that?
Which is where we talk about something that happened that made us cry. Not necessarily in a sad way, although it can be sad. But it, you know, it doesn't have to be sad. Did anybody come prepared?
In the year 1940, maybe 1941.
Is that when they invented power vacuums?
Power HVAC. That's the first name.
Honestly,
name
one of the name. Better years for old Jean-Luc.
Wow. A little company called Archie Comics released a little comic with a scoundrel named Archie. It was actually in Pep Comics. This is all a lie now. I'm not a true Archie fan. It was in Pep Comics that Archie came out. Anyway, Greg Berlanti is producing a Archie. No, sorry. Wow. My brain
Your
is too Riverdale coded. No, it is. But they're producing a Scooby-Doo TV series on
he
Netflix.
He sure the fuck is, buddy.
Greg Berlanti.
Wait,
I don't know why I went Riverdale.
I don't know how this isn't the opposite of a cry space, because for me, this is the opposite of a problem.
It is. But it's Greg Berlanti, who's like...
Riverdale fame.
If I saw Robert Aguirre-Sacasa? Yeah, he's the Arrow guy for me. Is he a Riverdale guy too?
He was an EP on Riverdale. He was an EP on Chilling Adventures.
He's Mr. CW.
I don't know how much of a hand he had in any of that.
I think, he's just a CW guy.
I think, like, if I heard Robert Aguirre-Sacasa related to this, like, he's the sicko.
I would have been locked in.
Yes, yes.
He's the Sabrina. He's the Riverdale.
I would have been locked in, for sure.
But, yeah, like, I've, for so long, just like, oh my gosh, like a Scooby-Doo show where they're, like, you know, horny teens solving mysteries and you got, like, actual murders and shit going, like, mm-hmm. fantastic. So half cry, half not cry for that.
Did you ever watch that fan project that was kind of it was on YouTube. I think there were only like a few episodes of it.
I remember this, but I didn't actually end up watching any of it.
I vaguely remember watching the first episode and it was kind of terrible, but
like I remember when it came out and then like there was not really very much buzz about it after that, so I just didn't ever hop on watching it.
I don't think so. I saw Daphne and Velma, but that's different.
Oh, Daphne and Velma rocks. Yeah. I love Daphne and Velma.
Yeah,
but I did watch an episode or two of that, you know. Probably about as, you know, probably a little better than the Velma show, but...
Oh, season two. I gotta watch that. That's good. Thanks for reminding.
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. Great. You gotta get right on that.
Have you heard about the spoiler?
No.
For Velma season two?
Please tell me the spoiler for Velma.
I was gonna say, can I tell you? I would love to tell you.
Please tell me the spoiler.
The big thing that happens in season two of Velma, supposedly, is that Scrappy Doo kills Velma. I don't know what impact that has on the season or like when even that
Scrappy
happens.
Doo, my goat!
But millennials writing Scooby-Doo have one joke, and it's that Scrappy-Doo is evil. And in this case, he killed Velma in the Velma show.
See, that's, you know what? People don't like that show. Velma dies. Good. They're happy.
Alice, you should really watch this and report back.
I will. I mean, I love, you know, the episode hasn't aired yet, but next week I hear.
One day.
One day. Jean-Luc, have you edited it? No, I'm kidding. I'm sorry. No. Yeah. Thank you for editing this show as much as you do all the time.
If somebody sends me the audio for that, I'm more likely to edit that than the audio from the end episode that I was actually on, because I don't have to
Did
hear
Did you not also
voice.
Get that?
I just have the Winnie the Pooh episode. I checked the other day.
Okay, yeah. But, I'll make sure that Annie sends you the audio for Morbius and Velma.
Fred Jones is a fantastic character in that show. On a very bad show.
Unfortunately, yes.
Easily, just so good.
Power
but, yeah,
of Glenn
I mean,
Howerton.
Riverdale has not. Like, there's a hole in my TVing watching. Nothing can replace
there's
it.
There's a hole in all of our hearts where Riverdale used to be.
For me, a Scooby-Doo show that is like CW is that's yes, 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 maybe. How about you?
I believe.
What made you cry this week? Person who answers next.
I have one. My cry space is that I'm busy all the rest of this week, so I'm not going to be able to drag my wife out to see Challengers in theaters this week, and I will have to wait until perhaps next, like I think Sunday night or like just the following week will be when I am able to see Challengers, and that makes me very sad.
My cry space is also Challengers related, although it's the opposite. It's that I saw Challengers and I did cry. Yay. At the end, not like out of sadness, but out of like, you're so overwhelmed by emotion and you're so excited that there's like tears coming out of your eyes. Oh my God. Whoa. That movie fucking owns. I will not go into spoilers or anything, because although there has been a lot of that online, but hello. Is that Ditto or Buster?
This is Ditto. For the listeners, Ditto, right? Ditto, because of the place that my desk is set up, I'm in the cat zone, and I did Ditto walked by me, so I picked him up and I sat cat him in my
zone,
lap. And
cat now, zone.
Now Jean-Luc and Alex get to look at him. Baby.
He's adorable. But yeah, I saw Challengers. It's great. You feel a lot of emotions watching Challengers. Among them, holy fuck, Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross are just, they should do every fucking soundtrack. I'd get tired of it, but God, this soundtrack is incredible.
I'm so amped for the soundtrack. I didn't know until I was already excited for Challengers that they were doing the soundtrack, and that just like amplified my excitement like tenfold.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
I need a new good score from my dad, Trent Reznor.
Yeah. Emily, I do think you are going to love it.
I have no doubt, and you saying that I would probably love it definitely like sealed the deal for me, as far as like I'm definitely gonna make it to see this in theaters.
It is extremely worth it. Alex, are you gonna become a Challenger's head?
I don't like tennis like you guys do, so.
I hate tennis. I have no connection to tennis.
The director of this movie doesn't like tennis.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all I needed to hear. I'm in. But no, I you know what convinced me to check out this movie is there's that person who saw Dune like 45 times or whatever.
And now he's seeing Challenger. Now they're seeing Challenger.
So it turns out they're just a, you know, Zendaya fan, it looks like, and it's not about Dune, which I respect.
It can be both. Go see the movie.
Yeah.
Or they should watch other movies. Is my opinion on that.
Other than Dune and Challengers?
And Challengers. Like, it's fine to go see a movie a lot of times in theaters. I get it. I've done it. But, like I'm probably going to go see Challengers again. I saw Dune twice in theaters. But, you know, like, 45 times is too, like...
He did get Dune back in IMAX briefly, though.
That's... I didn't know that... He
that's okay. Wild.
I was gonna say I don't know that he is singularly responsible, but like it was a couple of weeks after Dune had left IMAX theaters that like they did like a second like brief run of Dune 2 in IMAX again.
Interesting.
And
well, good for him.
I know it was attributed to him. I don't, you know, there's no way to know that
he actually unironically did the Morbius thing of telling them if they put it back in theaters, we'll go see it. But, you know, this time it actually worked.
Well, this is a good movie, so that helps.
It's just such a better joke that they put it back in theaters and then no one showed up. That's one of my favorite moments in cinema, I think. It's just like,
it's one of my favorite moments in history.
Oh.
The Morbius re-release and then no one sees it is. And
made, like, tricking what? Sony into spending more money is never a bad thing.
It's so awesome.
Oh.
But yeah, we'll be back in 2 weeks' time with more Runaways. The conclusion of, unlike last year, Runaway is only 2 episodes this year.
Unfortunately. So. But it does mean that we're going to read like a full run, like these 24 issues. So that'll be nice.
So we'll know, we'll finally understand how we got to the Joss Whedon. Which comes directly after this. But anyways, we'll be back with that next week, or 2 weeks from next episode, 2 weeks from now. In the meantime, follow us on Twitter @Crime Book Club. I'm at JLBotBill on Letterboxd, where you can see all the movies I watch, if you care about that. Alex on Twitter at AlexHanziak. Emily's on Twitter at MPandanata. She's also on Letterboxd at Pandabore, same on Twitch, and then has like 10 trillion podcasts. You probably know about those at this point. But you can Yeah, you can listen to Imagine Me and whatever. It's Imagine Me and Utena.
And, it's always Imagine Me and Utena, just sometimes in different flavors.
It's a different show right now, I think. The Twitter name is different, but
it should be a different show if I put out more episodes of
that. Oh, one of many podcasts that Emily's on that has a bunch of episodes banked that don't get released. That's
but only one of them I'm responsible for, and it's this one.
Okay, when podcast recording gets banned, but podcast posting is still legal.
Oh, true. Laughing.
I'll have such we'll a see. Backlog. I'll be so ready.
The last new podcasts will be in the Emily.
No, the last new podcast will be an episode of Fresh Podcast Market, I'm sure.
Wow. Oh, but yeah.
But this is fun.
We'll check all those out, and we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Say goodbye.
Bye.
Ooh, that was cool.